One day Moses was leading the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led the flock far into the wilderness and came to Sinai, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. This is amazing. Moses said to himself, "Why isn't that bush burning up? I must go see it." When the Lord saw Moses coming to take a close look, God called to him from the middle of the bush. "Moses, Moses." "Here I am," Moses replied. "Do not come any closer," the Lord warned. "Take off your sandals, for you're standing on holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." When Moses heard this, he covered his face, because he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord told him, "I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard their cries of distress because of their harsh slave drivers. Yes, I am aware of their suffering. So I've come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile land, spacious land. It is a land flowing with milk and honey, the land where the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and the Jebusites now live. Look, look. The cry of the people of Israel has reached me, and I have seen how harshly the Egyptians abused them. Now go, for I'm sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people Israel out of Egypt." Aging is never an issue with God. Oh, it's a big issue with people. But God does not address our age and then determine what he should do with us, like people do, like companies do. And those who live constantly preoccupied with their age and began to get up in years, as we refer to it, 75, 80, 85, 90 years old, unless you are unusual, you struggle with one of three areas. Number one, feeling useless. You once were very useful, perhaps held down a very responsible position, or played on a team and did very well as an athlete, or flew an airplane, or whatever. But not now, not now. That's over. You're over. You feel useless, over the hill. Finished. Not true, but you feel that. Second is guilty. You've done things back then you wish you could redo, given a second chance to redo that whole scene. You'd do it differently and you'd do it better. I know. You won't do that ever again. You won't ever go back and redo it. But guilt will take you in its grip and tell you, because of that, you're stuck. And the third is self-pity. Woe is me. Oh, woe is me. I mean, I go from pimples to wrinkles. About the time my face clears up, my mind gets fuzzy. And here I am, useless, guilty, feeling sorry for myself. Stop. Stop that nonsense. None of that comes from the living God. It comes from you, or it may come from the ones you used to work for or play alongside of, or those who have it in for you. Never comes from God. Long as you have breath in your lungs, He has a plan. I'm thinking right now of my deceased father, who lived with us for 9 years. My dad lived during his life for two things, two great lights in his life. First, his work. He lived to work. He loved his work and did very well at it. I worked for him for 4.5 years. But in that particular company, you are through at age 65. Little gold watch, little party, bye, gone. That light went out. My dad had no hobbies, did not read much deeper than Reader's Digest, seriously. Did not have friends, did not cultivate friendships outside my mother, the other light in his life, whom he adored. He was 15 years her senior, and we all thought, when death begins to encroach, he's going first. Wrong. He outlived her 9 years, almost 10. She died at age 63. He was 87, 15 years older than she. So he had a number of years left. And when my mother died, listen, the other light went out. My sister and I, my brother was a missionary in Argentina and thousands of miles away from the States. So she and I got together and said to each other, you know, Dad can't live alone. We got to figure out what we should do. I said, oh, he's going to come live with us. We got four little kids, his grandkids. He's gonna meet them again and learn to, gear up for the ball games and all the cheerleading stuff and all the events and all the school plays and all the concerts and band and orchestra work and all the stuff we'll be doing. Church involvement, it's going to be great. She said, that sounds fabulous. You have room? I said, we'll make room. We had a room. Near it was a bathroom, a little area in our house, and perfect. I flew to Dallas. We were living in California. I flew to Dallas, packed his Dodge Dart and put all of his belongings there and drove out to California. And on the way, I talked about what I wanted to see happen. None of which happened. If we learn nothing else, we learn from my father how not to grow old. I mean no disrespect here whatsoever. I'm simply telling you the truth. He sat in this room, preferably with his door closed, television on, came out to eat, to return, came out to shower, to return, never went to one event, though we invited him over and over and over and over again. Not one play, not one game, not one cheerleading experience, not one concert. He did go to church because my sister would pick him up, and he loved my sister, and the two of them together enjoyed life, and she would bring him to our church, and they would sit in the worship service, and then she would take him to a cafeteria where they'd have lunch. She'd bring him over to her apartment, and they would enjoy a couple hours together and back home, and door closed, television on. One day our youngest said to me, Daddy, who's the old man at the table again? And he wasn't trying to be sarcastic or funny. I don't know that my father even learned the names of my children. Useless, and no longer at the shop, no longer superintendent, no longer having the leaders of each department come to him for guidance and leadership and promotion or whatever. So it's useless, no work. Second, guilty. My father was a divorcee. That was back in the days when that was scandalous. And you whispered, they're getting a divorce. So when my mother and dad married, it was because of the grace of my grandparents that they included him, and learned to really love him. They dearly loved my dad, but and my mom and he, beautiful marriage. But he lived with the guilt of that. He not only had another wife earlier that I found out about when I was a preteen, he also had a son. I didn't know that till I was a teen. We were at the bay and a car drives into the gravel driveway and at my granddad's cottage. And I said to my sister, "Who's that?" She said, "Oh, I think daddy invited somebody." He said, "Somebody important." He never told us. He had a son. And I said, "Okay, good." So I walked out and he said, he looked just like a young version of my dad, my half-brother. I said to my sis, "What's a half-brother?" He looks whole to me. And my dad, get this, shook his hand. You shake your hand and shake the hand of your kids? Not in our family. We hug them till they almost gag, and we'll do it till they're gone or we're gone. This is Brian, son. This is wife Dixie. Dixie. Oh. Talk about awkward. And then they left fairly soon after the lunch together. And so I decided I'm going to get into this. So I said, "Dad, could you tell us about..." "No, we're not going to talk about that, son." Never did, till his death. Never knew a thing about his other life. Guilty. Felt shamed. Nothing to be ashamed of. It was a marriage that didn't work, and it was a son that he could have told us about. I would like to have known about. And self-pity. Woe is me. Lost my wife. Lost my life. Not really, Dad. The same God who took Mom left you. We want you to live here. I want my kids to get to know their granddaddy. Back to the room. Door closed. Moses was growing old, how in a way that you're not supposed to grow old. Feeling useless. I mean, he had once been the charm of Egypt, the adopted son of Pharaoh's daughter. Check it out for yourself. Well, I think very well could have been primed for one of the upcoming pharaohs. Wealthy beyond belief. Moses was learned in all the Egyptian education that was available. Stephen says, before he's martyred, he was mighty in word and deed. Mighty in word and deed. He could really speak in public. He could lead. I mean, probably graduated top of his class from the Temple University at Egypt. And then he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew slave, and he knew he was Hebrew, and He hated to see that, and he took vengeance into his own hands, and he killed that Egyptian, and he hid him in the sand. You didn't know that? Check it out for yourself. And he fled from Egypt a fugitive. His face was all over the post office. Wanted. If you see this man, but he went deep into the Midian desert. And there he meets Jethro's family, and Jethro and marries Jethro's daughter and goes to work for his father-in-law for the next 40 years. There is no record of his ever hearing the voice of God for 40 years. Useless, guilty, full of self-pity. So, the best place to hide out is the desert. Live like a Bedouin in a tent. Led his father-in-law's sheep deep into the wilderness, came to Mount Sinai. Ah. Always put a chill up his back, probably, but that was then. This is now. Suddenly he heard something from a bush that wouldn't stop burning. Moshe. Moshe. If you read it in the Hebrew, you'll smile because you don't have to put your lips together. Here's Moses' answer. Hineni. Hineni. Here I am. I mean, he's talking to a bush. He's never read Exodus 3 before, so he doesn't know what's coming. I mean, he's useless, guilty, full of self-pity. Been there for 40 years. And he hears his name coming from a bush that wouldn't stop burning. Stay with me. I know you know the story, but unfortunately you know the story. And it hasn't gripped you for a long time. This is called No Moses Wake Up Call from a bush. He's talking to a bush. And then let me pause for a moment and let you stretch. For years, Cynthia and I ministered to the flag officers of the Pentagon. We were invited by CREW, back then called Campus Crusade for Christ, to be the speaker at their annual conference. It was great, delightful time. Wonderful time to be around those men and women, all of them out of uniform and in civilian clothes, so no issue was made of rank, though I knew I was sitting next to admirals and generals and colonels and commanders, and I knew enough to know these were people to be respected. But they're very real people. Love it. Love being with them. We got to know them first name basis, got to know their wives and husbands, and got to know their families sometimes, and even were in some of their homes. It was wonderful. The conference ran like this. I would do a talk on Friday night, and then we'd all get back together on Saturday morning. I'd do a couple of talks back to back. And then Saturday night, we'd have fun. we'd do crazy things together, and it was just delightful. And then I'd finish it up on Sunday morning, and we'd end arm in arm and talking about next year. Let's all get back together again. This is too good to let go. And we did that for years. Well, one of those Saturday evenings, we invited David Pendleton to join us. David is absolutely the best ventriloquist I've ever known. I say that because he's the only ventriloquist I've known. And yes, he is very, very good. He would always bring a bag full of, or a suitcase full of dummies with him. And the main one was Mac, kind of a smart aleck little wooden American that it would sit on his arm and it would talk to people. And when you're a ventriloquist, you can say things you would never otherwise say. And David took advantage of that. So sitting next to me, get this, is the highest ranking officer in the United States Navy. Right there. He and I were friends by now. We'd met at these gatherings several years in a row. And so we're sitting together. His wife's the other side. He's sitting by me. Let's call him Frank. And Cynthia's sitting here by me. And so for some reason, David just, or Mac, picks out Frank. Hey, he says, what's your name? And this top officer in the Navy goes, Frank. He says, hey, Frank, how are you? And he said, I'm okay. Where are you from, Frank? He'd say, St. Louis. He said, I'm sorry? He said, St. Louis. I know, I heard you, I'm just sorry. That's Mac. And so finally they go back and forth. It gets hilarious, the stuff that goes on. And finally Mac says to Frank, hey, Frank, you know what you're doing? You're talking to a piece of wood. You know you're doing that? I want to say that here. Hey, Moses, you're talking to a bush. But he wasn't. He's talking to the living God. The symbolism wrapped all around things like this, it won't burn up, neither will you. You think you're finished, you're just getting started. If I can keep this bush aflame, I can keep your heart beating as long as I please. So stop thinking of yourself as over the hill. And I say that to every one of you, especially you, who still get hung up on your age. It means nothing to God. Get that clear in your mind. Because if you don't, you'll miss some of the best years of your life, like my daddy. There's a little dialogue, and it's revealed to Moses that the Lord's heart is touched by the abuse going on over in Egypt. Moses has heard about it through the grapevine. He too is concerned about his fellow Hebrews, but he doesn't ever expect that second person pronoun to come out of God's voice. You are going to lead them out. Hold it. I'm 80. I mean, I'm 80. God never once mentions his age. Means nothing except to us. Or some company we worked for, or some airline we flew for, or some team we played for. Forget the age nonsense, please. Keeps many of God's people living in uselessness, guilt, and self-pity. Never once mentions Moses' failure from the first 40 years. Never once talks about how he used to be. He's saying, you're going to go, you're going to lead them, you're going to stand toe-to-toe with Pharaoh, and you are going to set my people free. Not me, Lord, not me. I'm a Bedouin. I lead sheep in the desert for Jethro. No longer. What if? And Moses protests, argues, goes all around the barn trying to talk God out of what he'll never talk him out of. And that God is an answer for every one of his excuses. Every one of his no's is met with a yes from God. What if they ask? Well, I'll give you the answer. What if I can't speak very well in public? I'll be with your mouth. What if they bring up the subject, who sent you? Tell them this. I can't do, I'm going to send your brother with you. Aaron's going to go. He'd live to regret that. And finally, as always, he makes his way back to the tent and tells the family, I'm going back to Egypt. And I'm going to lead the Exodus. I love it because everybody around is like, you what? Because to them, 80 means you're over the hill, you're useless and guilty and ought to be pitied. And does he do it for 40, hear it, 40 solid years, never looks back. The plagues come and go, and finally Pharaoh says, get those people out of here. Moses watches all of this take place, and the one who turned the staff into a snake and back to a staff is now changing the heart of Pharaoh into a willing usher, getting them out of Egypt. And who leads the pack? A once, in his estimation, over the hill Bedouin named Moses, who has become one of our heroes. It's funny, no one ever says to me, you know, one of the heroes I have in the Bible is 80-year-old Moses. They just say it's Moses because age doesn't matter. You see, any old bush will do when God's in the bush. And any person is qualified when God's call is upon us. I was almost 60 years old. I was in Fullerton, California. Had built a new building. We had moved from Woods and Malvern up to Bass and Cherry and Brea Boulevard, and we were in a new building, 12 and a half acres. And it was a great building, and it was packed out. Both services, our worship times were great. Howie Stevenson led us in music, and it was beautiful music and great pipe organ. And boy, I tell you, we were blowing and going, had a staff tight, working together. had all kinds of ministry to single parents and to those who were special needs, and had a tape ministry, and it was just all click, 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 working great. And then my phone rang. Remember, I'm almost 60 years of age. And I go, hello? They go, hey, Chuck, this is Jack. Yeah, and this is Don. Jack Turpin, Don Campbell. Don's the third president of the seminary. Jack Turpin's the chairman of the board of incorporated members at the seminary. Chuck, you got a couple of minutes? Yeah, what's up, guys? I was serving on the board at the school, and I thought they maybe wanted to talk about some board business, and well, they did. They said, we'd like you to consider being the fourth president of the seminary. I go, hold it. Look, I've got it made. This is beautiful. I know all the streets, all the back alleys of Fullerton. I know all around Southern California. I know the freeway system by heart. Man, the kids are all married, just Cynthia and me at home. Woo! We can just have all kinds of great fun together. And we're having parties and fun time. And one of them broke in and said, is ministry about having it made? Would you be willing to pray about this? Yeah. But remember, I'm 60 years of age. And most people they never mention my age. I'm not even sure they knew what it was and didn't care. God certainly didn't. So I go home. Cynthia's got supper ready. And we sit down together and I say, hey, you'll never believe what happened today. You're going to laugh. And I told her. She didn't laugh. And she says, it makes all the sense in the world to me. I go, what's the matter with you? I mean, you're 58. Forgive me, honey. That was back then. I mean, come on. She says, the window is open. It will close. And you'll never have this opportunity again. Makes all the sense in the world. I said, but we will have to pack everything up. And I hate moving. And we'll have to move. We'll have to sell the place. We'll have to get a whole new crew to work at Insight for a living. We'll have to talk Californians into moving to Texas. That didn't work. And we've got to set up a whole new approach, and it's going to be, I know that. Huh. 5 months later, I'm sitting in the chair at Dallas Seminary's president's office to cut to the chase, and I'm now over 60 years of age. Different ones are dropping by to say hello and welcome, and we're glad you're here and thanks for coming. And Howie Hendricks walks in, and I'm setting the picture on my wall to make sure it's straight behind my desk, and I hear the door slam shut. Swindoll! I know that voice. He looks at me and says, finally you're here. I said, how? Dr. Hendricks, I'm over 60. You know, here I am still hanging on to that. He says, you know how old I am? And I didn't know, but he was older than I was. still hitting the ball, still preparing students for ministry, just like he had me. So we're so glad to have you. Open these windows and lead us, he said. 4 years later, I'm at the country club and I'm walking along the hallway to look for a little group that's going to start a Bible study, I thought. It's packed with 300 people. I walk in with Cynthia and there's an applause. And I'm like, who are you people? And they were there to, not to just do a Bible study, but to start a church. And I was tempted to say, but I'm almost 65 years old. And we started the church called Stonebriar Community Church. You know what makes me afraid? What God's going to do when I'm 95. I don't know what he's going to do. It isn't at all about me. It's all about him. And the memory of how not to grow old that I learned from my dad. God bless him. He never got it. Some of you have an eater. And you really believe you're finished. You really do. You have no clue. You have no clue. You have no idea what tomorrow holds. You don't even know what's happening this afternoon if you live through the afternoon. He is God and we are not. He calls the shots and we do not. He has plans that we have not laid. Our answer is to be, speak, Lord. Make sure it's his voice. Make sure you're hearing from him. Davy Crockett used to give the simple motto, be sure you're right, then go ahead. That's pretty good theology. You've never met Christ? Well, that's a place to start. No wonder you're out to lunch. No wonder you're missing it. No wonder life's gotten boring. No wonder you think you're finished. You haven't really gotten started till you come to the cross. That's the beginning of life, as it's meant to be lived. And once you come to the cross, you're in for the journey of your life. And you're surrounded by those who can tell you their story. This has been mine. They have theirs. And I speak also to some of you who need to hear this message, because God is not through with you. His plan is full of hope and a future that you wouldn't believe if he stopped you right now and showed you the motion picture in the future. I've often thought what Moses must have thought as he sat under candlelight on the journey for 40 years in the wilderness, talking to Joshua, saying, there I was, Joshua, leading my father-in-law's sheep. And I thought it was over. And for me, it was only beginning. And I'll guarantee you one thing, Joshua did not say, How old were you back then, Moses? Didn't matter. Didn't matter. Please bow your heads. Just close your eyes, build your own altar there in your lap. Let the Lord know you're listening, you're willing, you're ready to hear what he has to say, and when he speaks, you'll say yes. You'll say yes. Any other answer is called disobedience. It may mean a move. It may mean even leaving the country. It may mean being involved in an area for your career that you've never worked in before. Maybe a whole new career. Maybe a dimension of life you never dreamed you'd be involved in. And he's opening doors, and when he opens, no one closes. Say yes. Say yes. If you've never come to Christ, say yes. Say yes. Push aside all excuses, especially your age. Tell him you're available. And you're ready to go or do or be whatever he pleases. Thank you, Father, for overruling our uselessness and guilt and self-pity. And thank you for bringing us face to face with your voice, your will, your plan. Thank you in advance for talking straight to us, just as you did to Moses. Give us ears to hear and hearts willing to obey. I ask through Christ, our Savior and Lord. Everyone says, amen.